Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning to you all and welcome to this edition of Africa Link. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host in Bonn, Germany. Coming up on the program, Nigeria steps up its security ahead of this weekend's general elections with US President Barack Obama calling on Nigeria to reject violence.
All Nigerians must be able to cast their votes without intimidation or fear. So I call on all leaders and candidates to make it clear to their supporters that violence has no place in democratic elections.
A court in Senegal has sentenced the son of former President Abdoulaye Wade to 6 years in prison for corruption. Also on the program, we'll be hearing from a local entrepreneur in Nigeria who's providing money to the youth to start their own businesses.
Governments and big corporates alone cannot provide the number of jobs to engage millions of our younger Africans. But I believe that African entrepreneurs can and should.
These stories and much more to come on the program in the next 25 minutes, so stay tuned.
Top story.
We begin our program in Nigeria, where security has been beefed up, deploying soldiers and erecting barricades before an election at the weekend. This Monday, US President Barack Obama urged Nigerians to reject violence, describing the vote as a historic opportunity for progress in Africa's most populous country.
All Nigerians must be able to cast their votes without intimidation or fear. So I call on all leaders and candidates to make it clear to their supporters that violence has no place in democratic elections.
Also, on Monday, security chiefs met with officials from Nigeria's Electoral Commission for consultations on ensuring that the election takes place in a peaceful environment. DW's Ben Shemank was at the meeting and spoke to my colleague Sela Oneko about the discussions.
Well, let me tell you that, yes, the meeting has taken place between the Independent National Electoral Commission Chairman, Professor Tahir Ujega, and as the top members of the commission, then with service chiefs. Recall that about 5 weeks ago, the same service chiefs met with the Independent National Electoral Commission and requested that elections should be shifted for 6 weeks to see what they can do with Boko Haram to enable elections take place in the northeast of the country. So it is right that they come back to brief the Independent National Electoral Commission, telling them that, yes, grounds are ripe enough for these elections, and that's what exactly they've come to do.
What are the main matters on the plate in terms of security at the moment?
Well, in terms of security, we are seeing that there are more deployments in the northeast portions of this country. But there are some other states, they call them flashpoints, where there tend to be some crises. So you could see deployment of soldiers all over the place. The idea is to give confidence to the electorate that they could go out and vote, even though some people still feel that too much presence of the security in the streets could mean too much intimidation on voters.
And, I mean, we've also been hearing that the military has been putting up barricades and is buffing up security in Abuja. Have you seen any evidence of this?
Yes, you have some areas where soldiers, combined team of soldiers, police, and even plainclothes security operatives have some barricades. Sometimes they do stop and search. The idea is to also see if some people are carrying out arms. And as we are talking, the Minister of State for Defense, Augustine Okobundu, is actually saying that the soldiers are going to support civil authorities to ensure that elections are free and fair.
Yes, and on Tuesday, INEC will be holding another meeting with the heads of the political parties. So what can we expect from that?
Well, we expect what they call the very last of the last before the election. Now, it is also right that the same Independent National Electoral Commission should meet with these political parties, and where there are differences, they should be ironed out before the election proper. And again, I see that there are plans to still appeal to these political parties to ensure that this peace pact they all signed, that elections will be free and fair and that there will be no violence, should be adhered to before, during and after the elections. And that is exactly what they're going to be hammering on as they meet this Tuesday.
Ben Shemang in Abuja. In the meantime, Nigeria's Independent Electoral Commission says 80% of eligible voters have received permanent voters' cards and are ready to hit the polling stations. For more details, here is Obale Musa in Lagos.
On March 28, over 68 million people are registered to select a new Nigerian president in the hope of turning the fortunes of the largest economy in the continent. At the center of it all is the Nigerian Independent Electoral Commission, which says it has now issued new permanent voter cards to 82% coverage of its population. INEC spokesman Nick Dazang described the exercise as a great success.
Thankfully, we have reached this point at which more than 80% of Nigerians have collected the PVCs, and we are also correspondingly looking forward to a very high turnout, you know, in the elections because of the profound interest that Nigerians have shown in the elections and the kind of debate, you know, robust and comprehensive debate that has preceded the election and the kind of voter education and enlightenment that the commission, its development partners, the media and civil society have mounted concerning the elections.
The new voter cards store the voter's facial image and biometric data, which is supposed to prevent vote rigging. It took one voter, Greatman Andy, 2 months of perseverance to get the permanent voter card.
I just collected it last month.
And you are now ready for the election?
I am ready for election. It's for own good. It's going to work. This little duration that we had is just a blessing in disguise.
His friend Toby Aku was luckier and got his card in 2 weeks.
Yeah, the permanent voter's card will be very great because it will reduce the ringing and the confusion, and it will make the smooth and clean voting for the voters.
But there is much controversy about the Electoral Commission's work and the actual number of people it has reached. Abdullahi Jallo, the Deputy National Publicity Secretary of the ruling PDP, was less optimistic about the voter registration.
Among the number of people, registered people in that state, and if you compare it with the number of the registered voters that have collected the cards, i.e., as I gave you example of Rivers, Adamawa, Zamfara, Ogun, and other states, you will see glaringly that still, INEC, notwithstanding, it has reached 65 to 67%.
Haruna Irima, who is the national leader of the opposition APC from Borno State, however, argues that attaining perfection in voter registration is an impossible task.
I think in APC we are very happy with this achievement. It is impossible, in fact, to get 100% in the distribution of these cards because some are dead. Some also naturally will not even go to the collection centers to collect their own cards. So 82%, I think, is quite good. It is quite enough. It's sufficient for a credible election. So the level of distribution is quite appreciative. INEC is doing a good job.
Now that the voter registration has ended, Nigerians are waiting for the day to decide between the continuity, which is the slogan of the ruling party, and the change promised by the opposition.
Obale Musa reporting from Lagos.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
Now, a special court in Senegal has sentenced the son of former President Abdoulaye Wade to 6 years in prison for corruption. Karim Wade was accused of illegally amassing about $1.4 billion during his father's 12-year rule. He was chosen at the weekend as the presidential candidate of the main opposition party, Senegal's Democratic Party, PDS. His lawyer said he would appeal the sentence. Brown Posthumous has been following the case closely. He spoke to Sela Oneko about the trial and what it means for the country.
I think for Karim Wade personally, it looks like this is the end of the road for the time being. He got 6 years in prison. He's also been made to pay more than €210 million in fines. Yes, indeed, his party, the Parti Démocratique Sénégalaise, the PDS, decided last Saturday to make him the candidate for the forthcoming elections. Whether that candidacy will actually hold is another thing. We know he's got a fair bit of support in the party, but we also know that that support within the PDS is certainly not without controversy. So there is going to be a fair amount of infighting going on inside the PDS, and it still remains to be seen whether that candidacy will actually hold.
So can you tell us exactly what charges he's been found guilty of?
Yes, indeed. He's been charged with what is known as illicit enrichment. There is a special court for this in Senegal, a court that lied dormant for about 2 decades before Macky Sall revived it after his election in 2012. And essentially what this means is that magistrates, investigative judges, policemen, gendarmes, even accountants have been delving into Karim Wad's books and accounts and possessions and have been trying to work out which of those possessions were acquired in a legal manner and which possessions were acquired in what they say is an illegal manner. Now, note here that he's not being charged with corruption, which would incur much more heavier penalties. He's been charged with something called illicit enrichment. And this has always baffled observers, because what this means is that we really have to go by basically hearsay, not particularly solid evidence, and even the prosecution has basically admitted as much. And there has never been any forensic accounting, as far as I can tell, into this case. So hence, not the charge of corruption, but the charge of illicit enrichment. And what they claim, and what Karim Wad has now been convicted for, is that he has amassed this substantial amount of money through a whole series of offshore companies that held offshore bank accounts all around the world, mainly in aviation, mainly in real estate, in real property, and also in media.
And do you think that he'll actually serve the sentence?
That's the 150 million euro question, really. The idea that what the detractors of this whole trial and what the people who support him within the PDS, what they will keep saying is that this is a political trial, this has been a political trial all along, and the only reason that Karim Wad is being convicted because the Macky Sall, the current president who took power in 2012, wants him out of the way because he fears the competition.
Bram Posthumus speaking to Sela Oneko.
Africa on the move.
In our Africa on the Move segment for this week, we head to Nigeria, where one businessman feels Africa's unemployment problem can be partially solved if the continent's entrepreneurs give financial support to young Africans with feasible business ideas. He has led the way by setting up an entrepreneurial program which he says will create 1 million new jobs and contribute $10 billion in revenue across Africa. Sam Olkoya tells us the story of Tony Elumelu.
Tony Elumelu is the man behind the African dream of creating 1 million new jobs on the continent. He intends to do this through the Tony Elumelu Foundation Entrepreneurship Program. Why is he concerned about unemployment among African youths?
Demographic trends show that we need to create 10 million jobs a year to sustain Africa's young population. Governments and big corporates alone cannot provide the number of jobs to engage millions of our younger Africans entering the job market every year. But I believe that African entrepreneurs can and should.
Elumelu, through his foundation, has set aside $100 million to support 10,000 Africans with compelling business ideas. Viability of the business ideas and the passion and commitment shown by applicants are some of the criteria for choosing those who will receive funding. Successful candidates will receive two rounds of funding, each made up of $5,000. They are not required to pay back the first round, which they will receive to set up their business. Pamanda Vea, director of the Tony Elumelu Foundation Entrepreneurship Program, says the second round of $5,000 will have to be paid back.
We will provide them with a second round of $5,000 investment. And that will be structured more as a loan and as an equity. Not because we want to make be difficult, but the reality of an entrepreneur is that they do have to talk about structured financing. They do have to understand what it is to take a loan and what is the responsibility and accountability in returning that loan. Right. So it's as much a teaching tool as much as an investment tool.
It is projected that the 10,000 Africans will in turn create 1 million jobs. Elumelu believes his dream is viable because he had in the past successfully run similar programs. Stanley Achonu, a beneficiary of one of the past programs, says the funding he and some young Nigerian colleagues got to develop an information technology company changed their fortune.
You know, they say miracles happen, and we consider that seed funding as a big miracle for us because it came at a very critical point when we were very down, as in at our lowest point, and we're, you know, you know, probably going to close shop. So it helped us sustain and it helped us to scale up. And today we have achieved more than, you know, we imagined at that early stage.
Encouraged by this kind of success, Elumelu decided to improve upon his job creation initiative to extend it beyond Nigeria and make it pan-African. Another remarkable improvement over past programs is that under the current program, those getting funding will be provided with mentors who will guide them on how to actualize their business ideas. The Tony Elumelu Initiative to support young African entrepreneurs will run over a 10-year period, with 1,000 successful applicants selected annually. The foundation has selected the first set of 1,000 beneficiaries.
Sam Olukoya in Lagos. A chapter in the history of external broadcasting will come to close later this week when Deutsche Welle shuts down its relay station in the Rwandan capital Kigali on March 28th. This transmitter station has been broadcasting Deutsche Welle programs on shortwave since 1965. To mark the relay station's closure after half a century, we now present part one of a two-part miniseries written by Madeleine Meyer and presented by Ines Wanjiru.
We are at Deutsche Welle's Kigali relay station a few days before it shuts down permanently.
The station wird zurückgebaut. Wir werden das nicht mehr brauchen. Die Container werden geleert.
That's German engineer Dietmar Wolf. He's clearing out a container which is full of spare parts, bits of furniture, odds and ends accumulated over 50 years. It's all going to be thrown away or auctioned off.
Es wird verschrottet und veräußert.
In the German city of Cologne, some 5,000 kilometers away, another Deutsche Welle engineer, now retired, Walter Berger, is struggling to keep his emotions in check. It's difficult when he's thinking of Kigali.
I would almost say there are tears in my eyes. What we built there over the last 50 years, this station, it was almost a kind of paradise.
Berger was at Kigali from the very beginning. He helped to build the relay station from scratch.
Kigali vous attend avec tous ses loisirs.
We are in Rwanda in 1963. The country had just gained independence the previous year and Deutsche Welle had signed an agreement with the new government enabling Germany's external broadcaster to operate a relay station in Kigali. In return, Germany was to help set up a domestic radio station, Radio Rwanda. Walter Berger was just 21 years of age when he was asked if he would help assemble a relay station. This was the first relay station that Deutsche Welle had ever constructed and that made Berger a pioneer in German telecommunications technology when he left for Rwanda in 1963. Originally, his posting was just for 24 months, but those 24 months became 28 years. Berger remembers his departure from Brussels airport all those years ago.
There was no mass tourism in 1963, but there was a photographer on the gangway taking pictures of the Globetrotters who were about to fly around the world.
Berger was one of just two Deutsche Welle engineers in Kigali. Every component had to be imported from Europe and deliveries took months. The two engineers may have been short of hardware, but they did not lack ingenuity. Instead of building antenna masts, they decided to plant them.
We chose eucalyptus trees because they're nice and tall. We planted them in the garden as antenna masts, and we were then able to put up a small dipole. And with that, we were able to start transmitting.
Vernünftig etwas senden zu können.
Deutsche Welle's Kigali relay station went on the air on 24th October 1965.
Ici la Deutsche Welle, station relais Kigali, Rwanda.
Deutsche Welle would later set up more relay stations around the globe in the Caribbean, in Portugal and Sri Lanka. When Kigali first went operational, it would pick up a shortwave signal from Deutsche Welle in Germany and then rebroadcast it on shortwave. In later years, the Deutsche Welle signal would be beamed to Kigali via satellite and then broadcast on shortwave.
The Africa service of Radio Deutsche Welle, the voice of Germany, presents News Review.
The relay station has become a Kigali landmark. The high antenna mast on Mount Kinyinya can be seen from the city center. Office buildings, warehouses, and living accommodation for the German and Rwandan were gradually added to the relay station down the years.
That report was prepared by Madeline Meyer and presented by Eunice Wanjiru.
Making a difference.
In Making a Difference today, we meet a Cameroonian professor, Rose Ghana Fomban-Leke, winner of the 2011 Kwame Nkrumah Award for the best female scientist in Africa. She has intensified research on malaria, which the World Health Organization says remains the number one killer in Africa, especially among pregnant women. Moki Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
While a young secondary school girl, Rose Ghana Fomban-Leke found out that many pregnant women were dying of malaria in her Cameroonian community, and this motivated her to one day save lives. Her efforts paid off when, after close to 100 attempts, she finally got funding to carry out malaria research at a university in the United States.
I went to look for where they were doing malaria research, and I went to the University of Illinois. When I returned to this country, I wrote the grants to the U.S. I wrote many of these competitive grants, finally got a good amount to, you know, in collaboration with people in Georgetown University, to set up the project on malaria during pregnancy.
When Rose came back home, she founded the non-governmental organization Cameroon Coalition Against Malaria, an organ she says was meant to sound a trumpet of war against malaria and drum a strong message to authorities to adopt appropriate policies and effect change for a malaria-free Cameroon. Rose Ghana Fomban-Leke is today the holder of several awards, including the 2011 Kwame Nkrumah Award for the Best Female Scientist in Africa. Cameroon's Minister of Women's Empowerment and the Family, Marie-Thérèse Abena-Ondua, describes her as a pace setter for women in Cameroon.
She's a complete woman. When they describe what she studied, you just say, hey, so Cameroonian women can do this. Why do girls not go that far in certain fields? It is because they used to think that those were reserved for men. She was strong enough and she was encouraged to do it. We are no longer in the area where they used to say science is for boys and literature for girls. Girls should know that they can go everywhere and do as well as boys.
Cameroonian society is still very conservative when it comes to women's promotion and leadership. That is why some people here refer to Rose as a man. Journalist Jesse Atogo told me she was not comfortable with such an appellation.
Men have been there, they are succeeding, you know, so if a woman goes beyond where society thinks she should be, then she's a man. But that's not necessarily so. I mean, we can argue about this till thy kingdom come, but women, when they set their mind to do anything, they do it.
Rose says she believes the best is yet to come for women in that country, but she has this advice.
Don't give up and devote yourself and not sit and just wait. Government hasn't done this. My goodness, you know, what are we doing ourselves in your little corner? I tell myself I have to keep going. And I think it's a lot of hard work. It's what you will term tenacity. There you work hard and you continue to do so regardless of the challenges.
That report was by Moki Kinzeka. And now a reminder of the stories that we've covered in the last 25 minutes. Nigeria steps up its security ahead of this weekend's general elections, with US President Barack Obama calling on the country to reject violence. A court in Senegal has sentenced the son of former President Abdoulaye Wade to 6 years in prison for corruption. We've also been hearing from a local entrepreneur in Nigeria who's providing money to the youth to start businesses of their own. For comments and suggestions on the stories that we've covered, send an email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. This is Isaac Mugabe in Bonn.